Case of Deborah Levy versus Wegman Food Market et al. Is it Mr. Weenie?
McQueenie, Your Honor.
McQueenie, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Not a problem. Your Honor, if permissible, I would like to reserve 7 minutes.
7 minutes? Yes, sir.
I have a feeling there will be much to talk about.
Okay, very well.
May it please the Court. I'm Tom McQueenie, and I represent Deborah Levy in this appeal from the Virginia Workers' Compensation Commission's decision, which found that the claims which were before the commission in 2016 were barred by res judicata as a result of a reversal by the commission of decisions rendered in connection with a January 2015 hearing.
Mr. McQueenie, let me jump in here. This record is kind of a mess, to be honest with you. I had a lot of trouble kind of jumping around trying to piece this together. But let me see if I understand this correctly, and correct me if I get this wrong. But it seems to me that what occurred here is a claim was being litigated through the commission process, through the, you know, and at a certain point in time, it's before the full commission, but they haven't rendered a decision yet. In the meantime, your client files an additional claim requesting authorization for additional surgery, and we have the situation where she's got the pre-existing arthritis aggravated by the workplace injury kind of situation. The new claim was processed. No evidentiary hearing was held. I mean, the supporting document, I guess some documentation was submitted in support of the claim. It made its way to the full commission, which still hadn't rendered a decision in the earlier claim yet, and they simply rolled this newer claim into their opinion on the previous claim, and issued their opinion. And then at that point, Dr. Stan had not been deposed, and the commission had found that the secondary claim had no support, evidentiary support, and made a ruling based on that. And then subsequent to that, Dr. Stanton was deposed, and a request for a new hearing was made, and the commission said, well, wait a minute, that's all res judicata, essentially. Do I get the time frame there correct, or did I misunderstand something?
You're very close. Let me just explain a little bit different about the claims that were filed during the appeal process. At the prior hearing, not the one where Deputy Commissioner Sherrill raised the issue of res judicata, but the hearing before Deputy Commissioner Munoz, the claimant was still receiving medical treatment through Dr. Stanton, right? It wasn't until after that hearing that the employer stopped authorizing any further treatment with the treating physician. We had successfully won that hearing, and she was awarded benefits, but the claim for medical treatment and surgery was filed subsequent to that hearing, as well as protective claims for disability.
Subsequent to the hearing, but prior to the decision of the commission, correct?
Correct. This was prior to the full commission's reversal of that decision, okay? So that's somewhat different than what you repeated to me.
I think from our purposes, we're not so much concerned with what happened before the deputy commissioner, because the res judicata effect, if it occurred, is with the decision of the commission, the full commission. And they, as I understand this record, they essentially ruled on two separate claims in a singular opinion. And then when an attempt was made to hold an evidentiary hearing to further develop the evidence, which they'd already held was insufficient, they determined that was res judicata and precluded, you know, under the claims preclusion doctrine of res judicata, they were simply not going to address it. You get one bite at the apple, basically. You didn't present sufficient evidence at that time. You know, you're out of luck, essentially. And I think your counterargument was, well, you know, if we had to do that in every case, it'd be more expensive, as I understand it. But
not just more expensive.
While that may well be the case, it's still, I mean, it's like saying you go to court and you ask, you make your argument, the court rules against you saying insufficient evidence, and then you file a motion to put on the evidence you should have put on in the first place. So isn't that what we have here?
No, it's not. the one distinction is that the full commission didn't actually rule on the arthritis issue in connection with that case, because it was never filed, right? They did mention, and I use the word dicta often, because it didn't actually pertain to the issues that were before the commission. What they said was that, you know, under the two causes rule, benefits would be awarded if the work injury is still contributing towards the need for medical treatment or disability. However, at this point, it appears from our review of the record, and there was conflicting evidence there, but there's a reason why I didn't appeal it. It would not have been successful to finding a fact. But they said, based on our review of the evidence, it appears that all of the medical treatment being prescribed now is for arthritis. And although arthritis could be part of this accident, the evidence isn't before us. And that was true. The focus for the prior hearing was to get the medical evidence to link the work injury in part to the disability and need for treatment. She had pre-existing arthritis before this whole event happened. That much was known. What was not known was, to the extent of any, that the arthritis was made worse by the accident. That's a separate claim, particularly if it's not the original injury that aggravates the arthritis, which oftentimes by the commission gets wrapped up. I mean, there's several cases with the commission that say, you know, it's long been held that when arthritis is accelerated by a work injury, it's deemed compensable as to the original injury. That's just another manifestation of the two causes rule. This is a different issue, and that's whether or not there was an aggravation of arthritis resulting from a surgery that was performed for the compensable meniscus injury. That evidence did not exist at the time of the prior hearings. And
why didn't it? The surgery had already taken place, hadn't it?
The surgery had taken place.
And was there any new medical evidence developed later to suggest that there was a causal connection, that this was a consequence of the surgery, there was a consequence?
Yes, and it was the deposition that was taken of Dr. Stanton. The deposition wasn't necessary at the prior hearing because he had addressed in questionnaires the issue of the correlation between the work injury as well as the arthritis. Keep in mind, Dr. Stanton's treatment was all still being authorized at the time.
Dr. Stanton recommended the surgery in January of 2014, isn't that right?
Correct. So the surgery had been recommended prior, right? But the medical treatment was still being authorized for the meniscus injury up until that point. And then after the hearing, that's when they stopped authorizing additional treatment, and the claim was filed.
One of the problems I have personally with this case is that you didn't bother to provide us with the September 21st, 2015 Commission review opinion. You quote from it in your briefs, but that's all we have in the record, frankly, is your quotes from the opinion. We don't have the Commission's opinion as a whole as part of this joint appendix. So, I mean, that kind of makes things more difficult for us, but it seems to me the fundamental issue is the commission ruled. Now, no exception, we don't, or at least there's nothing in the record that suggests to me there was any, you know, request for immediate, I'm trying to think of what the equivalent would be in an administrative type of hearing, but basically in like a new trial type, motion for a new trial sort of, motion for a new hearing or a motion to set aside, something along that nature as their decision being untimely. So they've ruled, I mean, they clearly have ruled. It's a tribunal with authority to do so. And so in the abstract, that would seem to preclude, you know, any future claim along the same line, it seems to me. So I know your argument is that that's an error, but without the opinion giving its, you know, the full text of its rationale, and without knowing what actions were taken, if any, in the commission level, at the commission level, to correct their error, if there was one, I'm not sure what we can do about it, to be honest with you.
Well, the opinion was quoted by Deputy Commissioner Sherrill in pertinent part, as well as in my briefs. It was referenced by the commission's decision, but we weren't.
I get that, but we don't have the full thing.
We're not appealing the decision that they made before. That issue is really
but
not.
That opinion allegedly precludes any future claim along the same lines, correct?
Not if there is a change of condition and a new right of action. There's nothing from which the commission can find that the claim was ever raised before or that the right of action existed before. The issue of whether or not the surgery accelerated a pre-existing condition is a completely different issue. The fact that the commission addressed the issue in saying that we don't discount the fact that a injury can accelerate pre-existing arthritis, that really doesn't have any bearing specifically to the issues here, because what they did quote in the full commission opinion that's on appeal today is that those claims, although they were not addressed, and they specifically say that they were not addressed and not raised at the prior hearings.
Yeah, but
I
think what confuses me, or what concerns me, maybe is a better way to phrase it, is, you know, we're the opinion of the September 21st, 2015 allegedly has res judicata effect. We only have excerpts from it in the record. We don't have the entire thing. So, I mean, and of course, there's a presumption of regularity. We presume the commission was correct, and it's like if we had only a partial final order of a trial court in a civil or a criminal case, and we're asked to, you know, determine whether there was res judicata effect, where we only have part of what the decision was, and even though everybody sort of agrees this was sort of dispositive, you know, without the full context, I'm not sure how effective we can be in assessing, you know, whether a claim is completely precluded by an existing judgment when we don't have the context or the details of that judgment. That's where I'm coming from.
Well, obviously, it's in the record, and I'm aware that it does not necessarily preclude decisions from this court if something that's in the record is not included in the appendix. What I think that is being confused here is whether it can preclude, and that's the issue, whether it can preclude new issues that were never raised. And that much is pretty clear by what is in the appendix of all the claims that were filed.
I just want to make sure you're aware you're well into your rebuttal time.
I just wanted to address that question. It's a very important question.
Yes.
But you don't need the opinion itself when all of the claims that were before the commission are in the appendix, and it's clear that the claims were not before them. They can't make a decision that's binding as to other claims that have not yet been filed and which could not have been filed and stood any chance of success. There was no evidence because there was no opinions as to any acceleration of the arthritis. They weren't necessary in connection with the other claims, and they weren't developed. So, I mean, this really just comes down to we need the commission to readdress Brock, and I'm going to save my rebuttal time, but the issues with Brock are being misconstrued by the Workers' Compensation Commission. Their opinions on res judicata are confusing issue preclusion with claim preclusion and have essentially used Brock as a sweeping bar against any and all claims that an attorney could presumably file, even if the evidence doesn't exist, even if there's no reason to file such a claim, if later the evidence comes to light, which would support such a claim, timely filed, then had they been done so with the prior claims, it would then not be, the claimant could not receive those benefits because then it is issue preclusion. So the application of Brock is being done very wrong, right? And in the reply brief, I cited to Wood, which really goes into explaining just how different these claims for change of condition applications really were and how they can't overlap one another. And I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Which is in the negative right now. But anyway, Mr. Mayfield?
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
May it please the court, Alex Mayfield for Wegmans. Judge Humphreys, may I address your concern about the procedural issues? First of all, the first hearing took place before Deputy Commissioner Munoz. I believe it was January 2015, the one that we're concerned about. As part of the defenses raised to that in that hearing was that her disability wasn't caused by the injury by accident itself, but was part and parcel to a pre-existing, arthritis. So I believe it was in response to that that Ms. Levy then filed that specific request for the surgery that came afterwards. Now, the full commission didn't take up the issue of the separate request for the surgery in its full commission opinion of September of 2015. They took up the issue of the surgery as a portion of the disability claim that he had alleged in the first go-round before Deputy Commissioner Munoz. So the surgery was the thing that was supposed to essentially qualify her for the disability period she had requested, because Dr. Stanton's opinions were that she could continue to work in the capacity that she'd continued, that she was currently in. She had arthritis of the knee that needed to be dealt with. She probably was going to need a knee replacement surgery, but she did need a scope to assess the extent of those things, and it was that condition that pushed him to recommend the surgery, and it was then the surgery that pushed for the disability period. So what the commission has found, in my opinion anyway, after reading the full commission opinion, was essentially that we just don't have the evidence before us to be able to say that you have a good disability claim because you didn't bring enough evidence. Now, what they did bring was they brought a questionnaire from Dr. Stanton. That questionnaire asked him, is this need for the surgery, is this knee condition causally related to the underlying injury by accident? His answer to that at that point in time was possibly. He didn't have enough. He didn't think he had enough to give a definitive opinion about whether those things were related. And so when the full commission's opinion came out, predictably, just like in a criminal case, it said, you haven't met your burden of proof. We don't have enough to sustain your allegations, and therefore we can't do it. So then when it came back before, the second time on a specified claim for the same surgery recommended by Stanton in 2014, the same one litigated in 2015, then they made a specific filing of a claim that said we want the surgery recommended by Dr. Stanton in 2014, that same surgery. That's when Deputy Commissioner Sherrill came back and said, well, that's res judicata. That issue has been determined. The commission found that you didn't offer enough evidence to prove it the first go-around, so you can't bring it up again. So to me, those are what the issues are. Now, unless there are any specific questions on that, I think I cleared up the procedural issue. Okay. Res judicata isn't a different animal before the commission than it is before the rest of the courts. I mean, the same concepts apply, the same legal precedents apply, and that's what Brock stands for. Brock talked about, I believe, Miller v. Smith. That's a 1919 case. And there it said, the effect of the final decree is not only to conclude the parties as to every question actually raised and decided, but as to every claim which properly belonged to the subject matter of the litigation.
Let me interrupt you, and it seems to me that And one of the complicating factors here is a recognition that the procedures before the commission are far more informal than they are in the typical courtroom. But given that, certainly these legal principles apply. So, you have res judicata, which is typically a claim preclusion, issue, and then there's collateral estoppel, which is a related doctrine that deals with litigating the same issue between the parties. So, you know, in terms of whether the this particular claim of exacerbation of the arthritis by the workplace injury is, has been, it's certainly been litigated once, and there's no question about that. But I understand Mr. McWeeny, at least on brief, to take the position that when there's additional evidence, newly discovered evidence, I guess, if you will, and from his perspective, that the that there has been additional deterioration as a result, and maybe it's not styled as a change of condition, but the commission can certainly consider the same injury if there's been an exacerbation of the condition that requires additional treatment. That's contemplated by the statute. But if it's the same issue, same factual issue that's already been litigated, that's collaterally estopped typically.
Right.
And so we're in this sort of gray area, it seems to me, where, you know, on the one hand is, you know, the issue may be precluded, but if it's a change in condition, maybe it's not res judicata, it may well be collaterally estopped. That kind of thing. Can you help us, try to work through that?
Yes, Your Honor. I think this is one of those situations where both collateral estoppel and, claim preclusion apply. They both apply to different aspects of the initial filing in 2015, what was initially considered there. So you have, you have your disability claim, your change in condition disability claim for a claimant. You got the two factors that you have to prove. You have to prove work-related disability, and you have to prove that it was caused by the underlying injury by accident or some sequela of that. Okay? So when you get to the claim splitting aspect here is this. It doesn't matter what caused the degenerative condition of the knee. Dr. Stanton's opinion underlying the disability claim that was dealt with by Deputy Commissioner Munoz was she's got a former meniscal tear and she's got degenerative condition in the knee. We need to treat it. Didn't matter how it was caused at that point in time. We're 3.5 years after the initial surgery happened. It doesn't matter if the degenerative arthritis was aggravated by the injury by accident. It doesn't matter if it resulted from the surgery 3.5 years ago. All those facts are in existence as of the time of this this hearing in January of 2015. They were all in existence in January of 2014. Okay, so the claim splitting thing comes down to it doesn't matter whether it was caused by the original injury, by a surgery, or just by, you know, aggravation that was touched by the injury in some fashion. All those facts, the factual transaction underlying that recommendation for the surgery and thereby the disability, all existed in January 2015. So the bar principle of res judicata applies, because if they wanted to bring a compensable consequence claim, and I disagree that that's a different animal, if they wanted to say that there was a different theory under which this degenerative condition developed, they should have brought it then, because that was when we were litigating causation. I mean, that's when I think the law really backs me up on this, but compensable consequence as a phrase is a way of referring to a concept. It's not a different thing. It's a way of explaining the limits of causation of a particular injury. It's kind of like proximate cause or something like that. You know, a compensable consequence just means that in comp, we're willing to only go so far in terms of what causation means. We're not going to be able to go beyond that to a non-compensable consequence of a compensable consequence. So it's almost like using a term like negligence to say, you know, is a quick reference to explain, well, there was a duty, this is what the duty was, and this is what the breach was. It's a phrase of art rather than a different thing. in terms of collateral estoppel, the surgery was clearly litigated. The surgery recommendation was there. That specific surgery recommendation was the thing that underlied their whole disability claim. So that was specifically litigated, and it was specifically found by the full commission that they didn't have enough to prove it. And so when Ms. Levy argues that the evidence didn't exist, I take issue with that. The evidence existed. All the medical facts were there. It was just they didn't go ask their expert to get an opinion until after the first decision was rendered. Well, I mean, if I did that, if I just didn't produce evidence that I could have produced at a trial, And the jury found against me, then the jury found against me. And I don't have a second shot to go try and get an expert to say something. So in any case, in my brief, my cite to a couple other cases, Brock is one, and Brock was mentioned. So Brock specifically says that claims precluded by res judicata include those made or tendered in the pleadings, as well as those incident or essentially connected with the subject matter of the litigation. And I'd submit to you that the causation of this pre-existing arthritis or the continuation of the arthritis having been litigated was essential to the subject matter. And whether you say it was because of a surgery that happened 3.5 years ago or because of the original accident, those things are all wrapped up in the same factual transaction. Now, the Virginia Supreme Court recently addressed res judicata in the Lasigo or the Funny Guy v. Lasigo case. And I found that particularly interesting because there is a quote with approval in that case. It says, the test used to determine whether a claim belonged to a prior subject matter of litigation is the same transaction or occurrence test. The Virginia Supreme Court, in that case, it does not matter that the claimant is prepared in the second action to present evidence or grounds or theories of the case not presented in the first, or to seek remedies or forms of relief not demanded in the first action. You know, it all comes down to what are the facts that are in play in the first go-around, what was litigated, and have those facts, are those facts different in the second? And in this case, they're not. Dr. Stanton stopped treating the claimant here after he rendered the last opinion in January 2015. He didn't see her again before that deposition. He hadn't seen her since. And so in the second go-around before Deputy Commissioner Sherrill in 2016, there was essentially no evidence that was offered that couldn't have been offered in that first case, because it was just, the only difference was the deposition didn't take place until a year later.
There was no additional medical treatment or care that had taken place.
Ms. Leedy had obtained some medical treatment from a different care provider, but not from Dr. Stanton. And again, it was that issue that in the first go-round, Stanton was asked whether those things were related. He said, possibly. We wait a year, we have a deposition, and then he explains that, you know, degenerative arthritis has a condition, has a tendency to continue to degenerate. And that was essentially, you know, the subtext for the second deposition. So the facts were all the same. Everything, you know, related to the first was the same as the second. There's one last issue I guess I need to address, and that's whether or not res judicata can apply to a change in condition application. That's one of the issues that's briefed before you in the appellant's brief, and I think that that's clearly proven by the Rubish case, that res judicata does apply to change in condition applications. In fact, Judge Alston recently wrote an opinion, Muhammad Bokira v. George Mason University, Commonwealth of Virginia. That was a 2015 case, 15 VAP UNP 0204154, and that applies res judicata to a changing condition application. So I think that that argument is disproven. If there are no further questions, then I'll take my seat.
Thank you. All right, thank you. We will step down and greet counsel and then take up the case of Robinson versus the Commonwealth.